Chapter 8 Questions. The next few days were neither pleasant nor productive. Fela's admission slot was at the very end of the span, so I attempted to put the extra time to good use. I tried to do some piecework in the fishery, but quickly returned to my room when I broke down crying, halfway through inscribing a heat funnel. Not only couldn't I maintain the proper alar, but the last thing I needed was for people to think I'd cracked under the stress of admissions. Later that night, when I tried to crawl through the narrow tunnel into the archives, the taste of plum flooded my mouth, and I was filled with a mindless fear of the dark, confining space. Luckily, I'd only gone a dozen feet, but even so, I almost gave myself a concussion, struggling backwards out of the tunnel, and my palms were scraped raw from my panicked scrabbling against the stone. So I spent the next 2 days pretending I was sick and keeping to my tiny room. I played my lute, slept fitfully, and thought dark thoughts of Ambrose. Anchor was cleaning up when I came downstairs.
Feeling better? He asked.
A bit, I said. Yesterday I'd only had 2 plum echoes, and they were very brief. Better yet, I'd managed to sleep the whole night through. It seemed I was through the worst of it.
You hungry?
I shook my head.
Admissions today?
Anchor frowned.
You should have something then, an apple.
He bustled around behind the bar, then brought out a pottery mug and a heavy jug.
Have some milk too. I've got to make use of it before it turns. Damn Iceless started giving up the ghost a couple of days ago. 3 talents solid that thing cost me. I knew I shouldn't have wasted money on it with ice so cheap around here.
I leaned over the bar and peered at the long wooden box tucked away among the mugs and bottles.
I could take a look at it for you,
I offered. Anchor raised an eyebrow.
Can you do something with it?
I can look, I said.
Could be something simple I could fix.
Anchor shrugged.
You can't break it more than it's already broken.
He wiped his hands on his apron and motioned me behind the bar.
I'll do you a couple of eggs while you're having your look. I should use those up too.
He opened the long box, took out a handful of eggs, then walked back into the kitchen. I made my way around the corner of the bar and knelt to look at the iceless. It was a stone-lined box the size of a small traveling trunk. Anywhere other than the university, it would have been a miracle of artificing, a luxury. Here, where such things were easy to come by, it was just another piece of needless god-bothering that wasn't working properly. It was about as simple a piece of artificing as could be made. No moving parts at all, just 2 flat bands of tin covered in sigildry that moved heat from one end of the metal band to the other. It was really nothing more than a slow, inefficient heat siphon. I crouched down and rested my fingers on the tin bands. The right one was warm, meaning the half on the inside would be correspondingly cool, but the one on the left was room temperature. I craned my neck to get a look at the sigildry and spotted a deep scratch in the tin, scoring through 2 of the runes. That explained it. A piece of sigildry is like a sentence in a lot of ways. If you remove a couple of words, it simply doesn't make any sense. I should say it usually doesn't make any sense. Sometimes a damaged piece of sigildry can do something truly unpleasant. I frowned down at the band of tin. This was sloppy artificing. The runes should have been on the inside of the band where they couldn't be damaged. I rummaged around until I found a disused ice hammer in the back of a drawer, then carefully tapped the 2 damaged runes flat into the soft surface of the tin. Then I concentrated and used the tip of a paring knife to etch them back into the thick metal band. Anchor emerged from the kitchen with a plate full of eggs and tomatoes.
It should work now, I said.
I started eating out of politeness, then realized I was actually hungry. Anchor looked over the box, lifting the lid.
That easy? Same as anything else,
I said, my mouth half full.
Easy if you know what you're doing. It should work. Give it a day and see if it actually chills down.
I finished off the plate full of eggs and drank the milk as quickly as I could without being rude.
I'll need to cash out my bar credit today, I said. Tuition's going to be hard this term.
Anchor nodded and checked a small ledger he kept underneath the bar, tallying all the Greysdale mead I'd pretended to drink over the last 2 months. Then he pulled out his purse and counted out 10 copper jots onto the table. A full talent, twice what I'd expected. I looked at him, puzzled.
One of Kilvin's boys would have charged me at least half a talent to come round and fix this thing,
Anchor explained, kicking at the iceless.
I can't be sure, he waved me into silence. If it isn't fixed, I'll take it out of your wages over the next month, he said, or I'll use it as leverage to get you to start playing Reaving Knight too.
He grinned.
I consider it an investment.
I gathered the money into my purse. 4 talents. I was heading toward the fishery to see if my lamps had finally sold when I caught a glimpse of a familiar face crossing the courtyard wearing dark master's robes.
Master Elodin,
I called as I saw him approaching a side door to the master's hall. It was one of the few buildings I hadn't spent much time in, as it contained little more than living quarters for the masters, the resident gillers, and guest rooms for visiting arcanists. He turned at the sound of his name. Then, seeing me jogging toward him, he rolled his eyes and turned back to the door.
Master Elodin,
I said, breathing a little hard,
might I ask you a quick question?
Statistically speaking, it's pretty likely, he said, unlocking the door with a bright brass key.
May I ask you a question, then?
I doubt any power known to man could stop you.
He swung open the door and headed inside. I hadn't been invited, but I slipped inside after him. Elodin was difficult to track down, and I worried if I didn't take this chance, I might not see him again for another span of days. I followed him through a narrow stone hallway.
I'd heard a rumor you were gathering a group of students to study naming,
I said cautiously.
That's not a question,
Elodin said as he headed up a long, narrow flight of stairs. I fought back the urge to snap at him and took a deep breath instead.
Is it true you're teaching such a class?
Yes.
Are you planning on including me?
Elodin stopped and turned to face me on the stairway. He looked out of place in his dark master's robe. His hair was tousled and his face was too young, almost boyish. He stared at me for a long minute. He looked me up and down as if I were a horse he were thinking of betting on, or a side of beef he was considering selling by the pound. But that was nothing compared to when he met my eyes. For a heartbeat, it was simply unsettling. Then it almost felt like the light on the stairway grew dim, or that I was suddenly being thrust deep underwater and the pressure was keeping me from drawing a full breath.
Damn you, half-wit!
I heard a familiar voice that seemed to be coming from a long way off.
If you're going catatonic again, have the decency to do it in Haven and save us the trouble of carting your foam-flecked carcass back there. Barring that, get to one side.
Elodin looked away from me, and suddenly everything was bright and clear again. I fought to keep from gasping in a lungful of air. Master Heme stomped down the stairs, shouldering Elodin roughly to one side. When he saw me, he snorted.
Of course, the Quarterwit is here too. Might I recommend a book for your perusal? It's a lovely piece of reading titled Hallways, Their Form and Function, a Primer for the Mentally Deficient.
He glowered at me, and when I didn't immediately jump aside, he gave me an unpleasant smile.
Ah, but you're still banned from the archives, aren't you? Shall I arrange to present the salient information in a form more suited to your kind? Perhaps a mummer's play or some manner of puppet show?
I stepped to one side, and Heme stormed by, muttering to himself. Elodin stared daggers into the other master's broad back. Only after Heme turned the corner did Elodin's attention settle back on me. He sighed.
Perhaps it would be better if you pursued your other studies, Raylar quoth. Dahl has a fondness for you, as does Kilvin. You seem to be progressing well with them.
But, sir, I said, trying to keep the dismay out of my voice, you're the one who sponsored my promotion to Raylar. He turned and began climbing the stairs again.
Then you should value my sage advice, shouldn't you?
But if you're teaching other students, why not me?
Because you are too eager to be properly patient, he said flippantly. You're too proud to listen properly, and you're too clever by half. That's the worst of it.
Some masters prefer clever students. I muttered as we emerged into a wide hallway.
Yes, Elodin said. Dahl and Kilvin and Arvil, like clever students, go study with one of them. Both our lives will be considerably easier because of it.
But...
Elodin came to an abrupt halt in the middle of the hallway.
Fine, he said. Prove you're worth teaching. Shake my assumptions down to their foundation stones.
He patted at his robes dramatically, as if looking for something lost in a pocket.
Much to my dismay, I find myself without a way to get past this door.
He rapped it with a knuckle.
What do you do in this situation, Raylar Quoth?
I smiled, despite my general irritation. He couldn't have picked a challenge more perfectly suited to my talents. I pulled a long, slender piece of spring steel out of a pocket in my cloak, then knelt in front of the door and eyed the keyhole. The lock was substantial, made to last. But while large, heavy locks look impressive, they're actually easier to circumvent if they're well maintained. This one was. It took me the space of 3 slow breaths to trip it with a satisfying ka-tick. I stood up, brushed off my knees, and swung the door inward with a flourish. For his part, Elodin did seem somewhat impressed. His eyebrows went up as the door swung open.
Clever,
he said as he walked inside. I followed on his heels. I'd never really wondered what Elodin's rooms were like, but if I'd guessed, it wouldn't have been anything resembling this. They were huge and lavish, with high ceilings and thick rugs. Old wood paneled the walls and tall windows let in the early morning light. There were oil paintings and massive pieces of ancient wooden furniture. It was bizarrely ordinary. Elodin moved quickly through the entryway, through a tasteful sitting room, then into the bedroom. Call it a bed chamber, rather. It was huge, with a 4-post bed as big as a boat. Elodin threw open a wardrobe and started removing several long, dark robes similar to the one he was wearing.
Here,
Elodin shoved robes into my arms, until I couldn't hold any more. Some were everyday cotton, but others were fine linen or rich, soft velvet. He lay another 6 robes over his own arm and carried them back into the sitting room. We passed old bookshelves, lined with hundreds of books and a huge polished desk. One wall was taken up with a large stone fireplace big enough to roast a pig, though there was currently only a small fire smouldering there, keeping away the early autumn chill. Elodin lifted a crystal decanter off a table and went to stand in front of the fireplace. He dumped the robes he was carrying into my arms so I could barely see over the top of them. Delicately lifting the top of the decanter, he sipped at the contents and raised an eyebrow appreciatively, holding it up to the light. I decided to try again.
Master Elodin, why don't you want to teach me naming?
That's the wrong question,
he said, and upended the decanter onto smoldering coals in the fireplace. As the flames licked up hungrily, he took his armload of robes back and fed a velvet one slowly into the fire. It caught quickly, and when it was blazing away, he fed the others onto the fire in quick succession. The result was a great smouldering pile of cloth that sent black smoke billowing up the chimney.
Try again.
I couldn't help but ask the obvious.
Why are you burning your clothes?
Nope, not even close to the right question,
he said, as he took more robes out of my arms and piled them into the fireplace. Then Elodin grabbed the handle for the flue and pulled it closed with a metallic clank. Great clouds of smoke began to pour into the room. Elodin coughed a bit, then stepped back and looked around in a vaguely satisfied way. I suddenly realized what was going on.
Oh, God, I said, whose rooms are these?
Elodin gave a satisfied nod.
Very good. I would also have accepted, why don't you have a key for this room, or what are we doing in here?
He looked down at me, his eyes serious.
Doors are locked for a reason. People who don't have keys are supposed to stay out for a reason.
He nudged the heap of smoldering cloth with one foot, as if reassuring himself it would stay in the fireplace.
You know you're clever. That's your weakness. You assume you know what you're getting into, but you don't.
Elodine turned to look at me, his dark eyes serious.
You think you can trust me to teach you, he said. You think I will keep you safe, but that is the worst sort of foolishness.
Whose rooms are these?
I repeated numbly. He showed me all his teeth in a sudden grin.
Master Hemes! Why are you burning all of Hemes' clothes?
I asked, trying to ignore the fact that the room was rapidly filling with bitter smoke. Elodine looked at me as if I were an idiot.
Because I hate him.
He picked up the crystal decanter from the mantel and threw it violently against the back of the fireplace where it shattered. The fire began to burn more vigorously from whatever had been left inside.
The man is an absolute tit. Nobody talks to me like that.
Smoke continued to boil into the room. If it weren't for the high ceilings, we'd already be choking on it. Even so, it was becoming hard to breathe as we made our way to the door. Elodine opened it and smoke rolled out into the hallway. We stood outside the door, staring at each other while the smoke billowed past. I decided to take a different tack on the problem.
I understand your hesitation, Master Elodine, I said. Sometimes I don't think things all the way through.
Obviously.
And I'll admit there have been times when my actions have been...
I paused, trying to think of something more humble than ill-considered.
Stupid beyond all mortal ken?
Elodine said helpfully. My temper flared, burning away my brief attempt at humility.
Well, thank God I'm the only one here that's ever made a bad decision in my life, I said, barely keeping my voice this side of a shout.
I looked him hard in the eye.
I've heard stories about you too, you know. They say you toffed things up pretty well yourself back when you were a student here.
Elodine's amused expression faded a bit, leaving him looking like he'd swallowed something, and it had gotten stuck halfway down. I continued.
If you think I'm reckless, do something about it. Show me the straighter path. Mold my supple young mind.
I sucked in a lungful of smoke and began to cough, forcing me to cut my tirade short.
Do something, damn you!
I choked out.
Teach me!
I hadn't really been shouting, but I ended up breathless all the same. My temper faded as quickly as it had flared up, and I worried I'd gone too far. But Elodine just looked at me.
What makes you think I'm not teaching you?
He asked, puzzled.
Aside from the fact that you refuse to learn.
Then he turned and walked down the hallway.
I'd get out of here if I were you,
he said over his shoulder.
People are going to want to know who's responsible for this, and everyone knows you and Hemed don't get on very well.
I felt myself break into a panicked sweat.
What?
I'd wash up before admissions, too, he said. It won't look good if you show up reeking of smoke. I live here,
Elodin said, pulling a key from his pocket and unlocking a door at the far end of the hallway.
What's your excuse?